Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that asks the questions you always wondered the other fans were thinking. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Hello, Matthew. How you doing?
You know what? Doing great, John. It's been a good weekend. We're recording here over the Easter weekend and had an extra day because of Good Friday. And so really thankful for that. Really thankful for the season of the year because of what we're celebrating. And yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. I'm very thankful. You know what I'm particularly thankful for today is that we're continuing our series. We're wrapping up our duology where this time I get to grill you in our series.
That's right.
Breaking Anakin.
And I have no idea what the questions are.
I know. And that's what I look forward to most. We're if anybody's tuning in for the first time here,
John,
if anybody's tuning in for the first time here, what this is Matt and I are giving our opinions on where we think things went wrong and where things could have, like, offering some opinions about what could have gone better. Because inarguably, Anakin is broken at the end of his journey.
Yes.
That's how he becomes Vader.
Like, so, quite literally. I mean, he's missing arms and legs and probably has a bad back after this, you know.
I would imagine that he's probably a little cranky because that chest plate, I don't know. That if somebody knocks that, does his internal air conditioning get knocked off? I don't know.
But just like copious amounts of sweat inside that leather suit.
Oh, maybe it's like a Mr. Freeze suit. I never considered that before.
Oh, that's interesting too. But for heat, because maybe he retained some of that lava fire
or something.
He likes it warm. He likes it toasty.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, because space. Well, anyway, I think what I want to do here is, like you said, you don't know the questions. And I'm sort of coming at this, though, with the experience of having been in the chair. And so I want this really to function as in a continuation of our conversation. So we'll hit some familiar points, but I have some curveballs ready for you.
All right. I'm excited.
So, okay. The obvious question that I think it would be great to get you on record with is just to start off right from the bat, which is, should Anakin have been taken from Tatooine? Yes, no. And then on top of that, with the death of Qui-Gon, should Obi-Wan have trained Anakin, or should he have been sent back to the farm, as it were?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's such a great question, both of them. I really liked your idea, what you came up with, but my idea, I think, is a little bit different, and as much as I liked your idea, and heck, they could have gone with it, I almost feel like Anakin just needed to be left on Tatooine, and they needed to leave a person to watch over him, kind of Obi-Wan-ish, and see what the Force did. And if this kid is really the chosen one, the Force will work it out. But really leave somebody there just to make sure that nobody takes him. You know, obviously, if the Emperor found out that this person was alive, you know, he would be very interested in him. So this person just needs to be safeguarded. It needs to be kept super secret. This needs to be like the CIA of the Jedi Order watching over Anakin. He doesn't know that that person's there. To me, that kind of seems like, if we think this person may be the chosen one, but he's too old to be trained, we leave him here, we put a watch over him, and if the Force does something with him, great. If not, we got our answer.
Interesting, because that begs for me the follow-up question, which would be, okay, you have somebody like Obi-Wan watched over Luke, somebody just on the periphery keeping an eye on things. How do you handle then something like pod racing, where he is going to be pod racing regularly, and he's still a slave, keep in mind, so Watto may sell him.
Yeah, You know, I think that, again, that's just something that you let happen. You let the force, if you really truly believe that the force is somehow in control of everything in the galaxy through the living force, you just wait for something to happen. And I mean, that may sound lame, but it just seems like to me that if the council has a problem, obviously, with training Anakin and him being too old and all of that, and Qui-Gon knows that when he takes him, he knows, sure. I think, that the council's going to be resistant, maybe not as much as they are, but yeah, I don't know. Okay. I think that would have been an interesting storyline. And then what would have been most interesting is that I don't know how that would have worked out. You know, maybe this might be kind of cool. You know, so then maybe that in episode one, it's that Anakin helps them, you know, get off of Tatooine, but they don't take him. They just have somebody sent back to Tatooine to watch over him. And then somehow episode two is about, you know, maybe it's Obi-Wan who ends up picking him up, you know, and sure. because something has happened, you know, and they... some sort of something with the force, and they realize, okay, yes, Anakin is the person that, but I feel like it would have been interesting in episode one to not even have him as involved as possible as much as they did, just kind of have him be the slide character who doesn't really come into play when he's older. And then, you know, episode two time period, and could have been really interesting. Sure. I don't know. That's just, in universe though, that's kind of my thoughts on, you know, do you take this kid who's already too old and try and train him?
I think that's a really interesting take on things, because the story does decidedly go in a different direction at that point. Absolutely. And I think that you sort of answer the question, if I'm understanding correctly, if I'm reading correctly, you feel as well then that after Qui-Gon's death, maybe Anakin should have been sent back as opposed to being trained at all.
Oh, that's a good question, too.
Or do you feel that once he's taken out of the environment, you can't just drop him back in? You've already changed the course of galactic events.
Well, I mean, I think if you put him, I mean, you just drop him back off home with his mother and he's free and she's not, you can't do that. So once you have pulled him away, the question of, is it Obi-Wan who trains him? No, I and at least as you said in our first conversation, no, it's not Obi-Wan at first. I honestly think that it should have been Yoda. I think Yoda should have taken it upon himself to train Anakin, specifically even as a younger, you know, that he would be the first master for this Padawan. Because I feel like if you know, I know he's against it, but the council says yes. I feel like he needs to be the one that takes that mantle on. And because, too, by removing himself from the process as much as he did, I don't think like he knows Anakin well enough then to truly maybe help him out the way he might need to later on, especially when you see episode three and...
sure.
You know, well, people will say the advice that Yoda gives to him is kind of cold and all of that. I mean, but no, he's giving him the right advice for the Jedi. He just, I don't know if he knows Anakin well enough to sense that that's not going to be the best advice for Anakin.
Well, I mean, I suppose you could also say that Yoda would be a far less intimidating, like Yoda, because of his diminutive size. I mean, that's sort of the sense why he, you know, the children love training with him when they come across, when we come across that training in episode two, he's with the kids. And so there's a sense that he has sort of a deft touch with children. And I think that would speak to your point that Yoda would be a little less overwhelming probably for Anakin, because... That's the thing that everybody, you know, makes the great miscalculation with Yoda is when they see him, when they interact with him, when they listen to him for the first time. Look at Luke's first interaction with him. Yeah. It's to underestimate him. And so maybe that would speak to a child's heart better. And we also see then, again, speaking to your point, since he is in the habit of training children, older children, like Anakin's going to just plug into that better and he's going to be able to relate to him because he's used to interacting with kids.
Yeah.
As opposed to Obi-Wan, who's just basically given a 10-year-old son, is like, knock yourself out.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I think that when you think about the idea of Yoda being the first person to train Anakin, his first master, it does something for Anakin and Yoda and that relationship. And I think maybe Yoda might be able to perceive some of the things that Anakin might need. And that's where, you know, maybe that comes in that he does have a couple more masters before like an Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And specifically maybe like you were saying, like an Aayla Secura, where he realizes this child needs to overcome that kind of mother deficiency.
Sure.
And find a way over that. But because I think what happens is that by Yoda being removed, he doesn't have as much of an idea that there are these things with Anakin that are different, you know, and Obi-Wan mm-hmm. is struggling with that because, you know, for the most part, Obi-Wan seems like he was a pretty good apprentice. And Qui-Gon even says he was a pretty good apprentice, you know. He probably wasn't too much of a, you know, hard head or anything like that, you know. And Obi-Wan's experience with trying to raise this petulant child who has no patience whatsoever, which Obi-Wan has no problem with patience, really. He's very good at that. I think, again, it would have been better for Yoda to kind of understand the ramifications of who this supposed chosen one actually is.
Okay. And now here is a question that I'm actually cribbing a question from somebody who posted on the Nerd Party Facebook page after the first Breaking Anakin episode dropped. And the question is this, because we're sitting here, we're looking at, you know, Anakin's training, all of those things. And I think we're looking for that moment, that one decision, if you will, that could have changed things, could have made things better. But here's a core question that I want to give you the chance to answer. Why didn't he go back for his mother? Do you believe that, and I'm going to add on to that, do you believe that was the Jedi stopping him from going back for his mother? Or do you think that Anakin got so caught up in his own life that he essentially forgot about her until the bad dreams started right before episode 2?
Well, that is interesting that you asked that question, and I have just been reading Obi-Wan and Anakin issue 3.
Oh,
and
okay.
And apparently, I don't want to, I'm sorry if I'm spoiling this for you, but Anakin mm-hmm. is kind of maybe thinking he might leave the Order. And there's a scene in there where he's talking to the Emperor, the Chancellor, because the Chancellor have gone on a mentor date to somewhere in the Undercity of Coruscant. And
because that's always the place you want to take your protege.
Right. Exactly. Well, he's doing it on purpose.
Of
you
course.
Can tell. But so he's taken him to this place where, all of the bureaucrats go. It's a pretty seedy place where, you know, human lives are trafficked and that kind of stuff.
It's called a strip club, Matt.
It's not quite that bad. There's no stripping happening. There's a lot of gambling happening and people's lives are on the line. With selling slaves and all that kind of stuff. So you can tell that Anakin, he tells the Chancellor, I don't think about that much. And Chancellor says, oh, Anakin, we know that's not true. And
nice. So
there is this sense that it's almost like Anakin is trying to hide the fact that he still thinks about his mother in those formative years.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's good enough to fool Obi-Wan. Into feeling that he is okay. And then I would say, too, at least in the films, it does kind of seem like Anakin does at some point get caught up in the Jedi-ness of it all. And
do you feel that it therefore could be, because I'm plugging into what you're saying, and I see, I think, where your thoughts are going. Let me see if I can sort of like meld it a little bit with my own thoughts here, is that Anakin thinks about her, but there's sort of this awkward conversation that needs to happen that never does. Where if he had gone to Obi-Wan and say, this is really bugging me and this is why I want to go, Obi-Wan would respond to it. But since Anakin doesn't bring it up because he is trying to meet some expectation of what a Jedi is, Obi-Wan never brings it up because it's, you know, like how sometimes you have those situations with someone you love where you should have a conversation about it, but you don't. And so it sort of festers over time. Do you feel that it's that sort of situation? Am I reading you right?
Yeah, I think that it's a conversation that just doesn't happen, like a lot of the conversations that just don't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Obi-Wan expects that Anakin knows the rules and that Anakin's okay following the rules. And since they never kind of have, it doesn't feel like the honest convos that they should be having, right. Things just get pushed, you know, down, yeah. down until obviously in episode two, it explodes and Anakin goes nuts on a bunch of, Tusken Raiders and I think the reason Anakin does that is because he feels guilty for having never gone back in the first place. And so when his mother dies, there's all sorts of guilt in every single way possible that this boy is feeling because he probably feels like he abandoned his mother. If he had been there, it wouldn't have happened, yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, he was a Jedi, and if he had just come back sooner somehow, none of this would have happened. So,
now, see, the thing is, I really find that interesting because, especially because you just highlighted, it's an honest conversation that isn't supposed to happen. And a line that exists in episode three that speaks to your point is when Padme says to him, when he won't tell her about his nightmare, she says, how long is it going to take for us to be honest with each other? So I think that you have hit on something that's a fundamental character flaw and possibly even highlights the frustration of this exercise looking at Anakin's downfall, where maybe there was just something so fundamental about him that led to the fall.
Well, Anakin kind of is that classic. He wants to be perfect for everyone on the outside. Mm-hmm. But he's seething in rage on the inside. There's something else that's driving him. He's trying to be who everybody thinks he's supposed to be, but really what he wants is just to kind of be in control. And he's trying to hide that. And so it's this dichotomy in him that's just warring. And of course it finally just explodes. And, you know, that makes sense when you come from slavery and you've never been in control of anything, that for the rest of your life, you're really going to be dogged with this idea of control. He just, he's never going to have the control he wants.
Basically, he's a sociopath. So, there you
honestly,
go.
Anakin kind of is, I think, in the end. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think the only time, for the most part, that we really see Anakin semi-comfortable with who he is through the Clone Wars in the series. He is pretty comfortable with who he is. Part of it's because he's the hero that everybody loves. That really helps Anakin out to be that character, to be the one that everybody's looking to be the hero of the story, and especially his own story, which we all kind of want to be, but Anakin even more. And, problem is when you live a life of lies, it's going to unravel or be used to unravel you. And that's exactly what happens to him.
Sure. Yeah. And I like you mentioned the Clone Wars series, because basically Anakin is just reacting, not thinking. He's actually taking Qui-Gon's advice, feel, don't think. But I actually want to bring it back to Palpatine, because you mentioned in the third issue of the Anakin and Obi-Wan series, we see some of the mentorship that Palpatine extends to him. And, we see it through the prequel trilogy that Palpatine is a presence in his life. And I actually recently rewatched episode three. And one of the moments in that always strikes me is when Palpatine goes down and tenderly touches Anakin's burned forehead when he's, on the shores of Mustafar, miraculously alive. So, given what you said earlier and given that, it spurs this question, which is, do you think that, I mean, everybody wants to assign Palpatine this great malevolent role, and he assumes it, and that is him. But do you feel that there was a genuine loving affection that Palpatine had for Anakin on some level, and was that what Anakin responded to with him?
I think the biggest question is there really, or is he good enough to make Anakin think there is? And that's what grabs Anakin. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that we're ever truly given an answer as to whether it's always just an act that Anakin mm-hmm. can never see through, just like the act of Palpatine in front of the Jedi, of just being, you know, the Chancellor, you know, and I'm just reacting mm-hmm. to what's going on. I don't really know. I'm just trying to do the best, like, you know, that whole kind of almost like Clark Kent act that he does. Like, nobody can tell I'm Superman behind these glasses, you know.
Right.
Superman, because we can say that on this show. I think that my real thought is that there may be just a sliver, and maybe that reaching out to touch Anakin as that happens is more of, oh, I'm screwed. This is not really going to turn out the way I thought it was going to. Oh, there, kid, you know.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like that you can read it either way.
Sure.
You know, but Ian McDiarmid does such a good job of playing the role, and everything that we see them write the Emperor with, you never know if it's just part of his plan or if he actually has any true feelings about anything other than just himself.
Okay. Okay. So that's a great, that, wow, that's, I really like where you went with that. I really do, a lot. And so I'm going to tee up the next one, because we all know that I love to poke you a bit about your Obi-Wan love. I love doing it. So we all know you love Obi-Wan, and we've talked about Palpatine, and we've talked about choices on Tatooine, and we've talked about those sorts of things. I want an honest answer from you right now. How culpable is Obi-Wan for Anakin's fall? If you were to give it, before everything else, before any reasoning, on a scale of relatively innocent bystander to it's all his fault, where does Obi-Wan fall on that scale?
Oh, gosh. I don't think you can say it's Obi-Wan's fault at all. And the reason is because Anakin makes his own choices. We're all responsible for our own choices. And yes, everybody around us has an impact on us, but in the end, we make our own choice. And I feel like that, for the most part, Obi-Wan, and this is the thing, this is the hard part about this, is it, other than the Obi-Wan Anakin comic that we've got right now, that is the mm-hmm. only thing we really see of Obi-Wan and Anakin really in that formative training and how mm-hmm. that worked. I mean, episode 2, by the end of it, Anakin's a knight, you know, so it's like we don't know what that whole relationship was truly like. And okay. So it's difficult to really say then with any kind of certainty exactly how culpable Obi-Wan is, because I don't know, because I haven't seen really a lot of it.
Okay.
Obviously he plays a part. But the entire Jedi Order plays a part in all of this. But in the end, Anakin's responsible for his own choices, and he makes a lot of bad ones. And I would say that Obi-Wan does the best job that he can, you know, and that, if anybody is to blame, I don't think it's him. I think it's the Jedi Order for allowing him to train a kid when he has no experience.
So you feel that and I'm not challenging you on this, I'm just making sure that I'm reading you right, that his culpability is absolved, if you will, because he's doing what the council has asked of him, what Qui-Gon asked of him with his dying breath, which was to train Anakin, and so he's giving it the best shot that he can. And so, yes, he makes mistakes, but in a sense, every master makes mistakes.
Right.
And so in the end of it, And I agree with you. Every person is responsible for their own actions.
Right.
You can't let somebody off the hook just because of this, that, or the other thing. They chose to do what they did.
Well, and in the end, too, I mean, to say that anybody else is responsible, and that's why I said, you know, really the entire Jedi Order has a culpability in this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I think, and why I call out specifically the council, is they hand this kid to a person who has never trained anyone. Obi-Wan is a great knight, and he will become an amazing Jedi, but mm-hmm. they hand him a problem child and ask him to handle it, and that's just absurd, you know?
Sure. Okay.
It's
no, fair.
Yeah.
That's
so,
fair.
I that's why I feel like it's like, how can you blame Obi-Wan for just like, okay, well, I mean, because he doesn't even want to be training. Let's be honest. Obi-Wan doesn't want to be training Anakin. He's doing it because he promised Qui-Gon. And I'm
right.
pretty sure his thought was, oh, please take this kid off my hand. Please take this kid off my hand. Oh, you're not going to take this kid off my hands. Okay, well, I got to do it. I made a promise.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that read because of the end of episode one where Yoda says, but agree with you, you're taking this boy as your Padawan learner. I do not. And it's actually Obi-Wan who's insistent in that moment. I understand how you could sort of say, well, no, at that moment he's resolute and he's just accepting his fate. But I just read the scene differently the way you read Palpatine on the lava shore differently.
Well,
so,
and,
but
yeah,
and that's
that
fair
scene
enough.
There, I think, too, at the end of episode one, you know, Obi-Wan saying, I promised I have to, somebody has to train this kid. So if I have to do it without the order, you know, so again, the resoluteness on Obi-Wan's part has to do with his old master. And that's where I just think the council sort of stepped in and said, okay, we're going to train this kid, but we're not going to make you do it.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm just going to make a quick note here that you're still blinded by Obi-Wan love. And okay, so on to the next question.
Hey, I thought that was a pretty good explanation.
You know, I can't resist an opportunity.
I know. No, it's fine. No, it's a great question, though, because I think it really does ask one of the fundamental reasons for the downfall of Anakin. And I think if we can agree about anything, it is that the Order bungles his training from the beginning, and it's really the fault of the Council for not taking a more active role in training this chosen one.
We're getting close to the end here, but I have two more questions for you. And the first one, I think I know we're going to agree on it. I feel we're going to agree on it because it gets back to the idea of every person is responsible for their own actions, but Padme is sort of given innocent bystander status by the way that the story goes. And so I'm not assigning blame to her in any sense of the word. But do you feel that Padme should have had some sort of sense, especially after what happens on Tatooine, that being with Anakin was a gigantic mistake? I mean, not just for the Jedi-ness of it, but because she was dealing with a guy who was not entirely stable in difficult situations. If Padme had said no to him, would it have changed his trajectory? If she had said no, you know what, this is just wrong, would it have changed his trajectory? Would it have been something that could have pulled him back from the edge?
That's a great question. I wish that Padme had been resolute. That she had, I mean, she's older than Anakin. She should have been old enough to say, look, you're a Jedi, I'm a senator. This just ain't a good idea, and let's just keep it at that. You know, and she gives in to her demons, I guess, and says yes. You know, and so Padme makes a bad choice because she is willing to live in the lie that she said she wasn't going to. And she betrays her own character by doing it. So she plays a responsibility not in Anakin's fall. It's not her fault either. She just plays a part in her disrespecting her own character and her own beliefs and what she knows is right. Okay. And that does hurt Anakin in the end, in the sense, because it allows him to be obsessively in love with a person that can, it can be used against him. Again, he's making his own choice to be obsessively in love with her, but by her giving in, it allows that to actually come to fruition. So it's kind of a
right.
chain of
it's,
effects.
It's not
thing.
It's not her fault. There's no,
no
blame
no.
here,
no,
but it is.
I'm not
one
blaming
more
her
piece.
At all for that.
Right. So it's just sort of like in a sequence of events. This
right.
is just another thing that doesn't divert the train off the tracks. It's
right.
not that
she keeps
she's
that
doing
train
anything.
On the tracks
right.
exactly. So yeah. and who knows? I mean, maybe if they had never been together, who knows how Palpatine would have had to have tried to lure
sure.
him in to the fold and you know. But he does a great job of giving him the kryptonite that he needs and.
Right.
For Anakin, it is to be in control and to be loved by somebody. And Palpatine taps into that, and, well, we know what happens.
So here's the final question, and it's a final question that we both promised ourselves, you know, we would ask of each other, and you asked it of me, so I'm going to ask it of you, which is, what impact did Ahsoka have on Anakin's development?
Watching the Clone Wars movie again for my other show, The 602 Club, and the fact that they bring in Ahsoka and they want Anakin to be able to learn how to let go. That's the goal. They're trying to help teach him the lesson about letting go. One of the things that I noticed, especially in that movie as well, is that Anakin is entirely too selfish for his own good. He tells Obi-Wan, Rex tells him, he says, "Didn't you tell me that you never wanted a Padawan because they would just slow you down?" Like, there is an arrogance and a selfishness to Anakin that the council can see. And they're hoping that by giving him a Padawan, that he will learn responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
He will learn
mm-hmm.
that there are more important things than just him. And he will also learn when it is time for him to be able to let go of his Padawan. And so I think Anakin learns some of those lessons, but I think they didn't realize, and this is where it comes in, that Yoda and the council didn't have enough of an influence on Anakin in the beginning. They don't understand his character enough to know that this is just going to be another Padme. This is not going to really teach mm-hmm. him the lesson that we wanted.
Interesting.
And so I think that actually Ahsoka ends up compounding that problem, because when you see what happens, she and her leaving the Order really drive maybe the beginning wedge between Anakin and the Council and the Jedi Order. Like, it may be the first big thing that really drives Anakin to say, okay, maybe this is all just a load of horse crap, you know?
Okay.
And this council is one too. And obviously it's wonderful that they worked in the Clone Wars series that Palpatine is behind that. He
right.
he is behind using this relationship for his own benefit, the same way he's using the Padme relationship for his own benefit and driving Anakin towards that. And the dark side clouds everything and the Jedi can't see it. And so I think Ahsoka is a pivotal pin in pushing Anakin over to the dark side. And especially too, when you see his love for her, it's not obviously the same as Padme, but it's the same kind of obsessive thing.
Right.
Like, I'm responsible.
Protective.
I have to keep her safe, like
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, Ahsoka is growing. And, you know, I remember when she was lost and she's on that planet with the Trandoshans. And, you know, she tells him, she says, "Look, the only reason I was able to survive is because of your training, what you taught me." Basically, she was like saying, "Look, I'm learning. You can
right.
kind of start to let the reins go a little bit, but Anakin just can't do that, you know." So,
cool.
I think he and Palpatine, unfortunately, use that relationship to their benefit. And well, we only have, I guess, as of this recording, a week left to see what happens as they finally confront each other for the first time since
I predict a very frustrating cliffhanger on that one.
It could
Call
be.
Me crazy.
It could be very much a cliffhanger. So
they want us to come back for May sweeps. But one thing we want is first and foremost to thank everybody for listening. Matt, this has been illuminating. It really has. I think that this duology here has really, I know it's given me a lot to think about, and listening to you, some of the things that you've come back with about this journey that Anakin went on that we've looked at, are really, really fascinating. I mean, the thing I love about our conversations is I then take them into the films and you give me things to think about. I really like that.
Well, so, and I love that it gives us the opportunity to just be challenged, you know, with like to really think this deep about this character and what drove him to this decision. You know, I think we can both agree in the end that we see Anakin is flawed from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was a way to really reach this boy the way that the Jedi needed him to be reached. To actually save the Republic and the Order. I don't think that there was a possibility of that happening because Anakin always had within him what it was going to take for him to turn to the dark side and really not the light.
Sure. So in essence, it's Shmi's fault. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way to go, Shmi, for having that child, you know.
That divine birth.
Yeah, that divine birth.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Whoever caused that divine birth, whether it was the Force or whatever, I don't know. But
well, again, this has been an illuminating, fascinating conversation. And we thank everybody for joining us for it. But I know that, Matt, you have many more thoughts on a lot of other things. So why don't you go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you online?
Well, John, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on the Trek FM network. That's Trek.fm online. We're also on iTunes for future provider there. I'm doing Literary Treks with my friend Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors. It's a lot of fun. I hope you'll check that out. You also find me on The Orb with Chris Jones. We're talking exclusively about Deep Space Nine, and it's so much fun talking about what I consider to be the best Star Trek series out there. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is a general geek show. We talk about some Star Wars on there. In fact, if you do enjoy Star Wars, I encourage you to look up our latest episode. We just covered the Star Wars, the Clone Wars movie, which is a lot of fun. John had to miss that one for some Jedi Council reasons, so we can't disclose those. They're secret.
Yeah.
secret negotiations were happening. But yeah, yes. Check that 602 Club. I think you guys are like it. And then, of course, you can find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And now, John, before we go, you have quite a few places that you are on the interwebs. And so let everybody know where they can find you on that really strange, ethereal place of ones and zeros.
Well, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. You can find me over as well on the Trek FM network when I'm not breaking my streak on the 602 Club. on Commentary Trek Stars with Mike Schindler, where we look at the non-Trek work of Star Trek creators. You can find me over on Words with Nerds, which is a delightful little podcast that I co-host with my buddy Craig, where we take a larger view of the Force, as Palpatine might say. And, of course, you can find both Matt and myself over at thenerdparty.com. where you can find all of the shows on this fine network, shows like The Senate Floor, Nerd Nuptial, and The Filibuster. And you can reach out to the show itself if you want to drop us an email at an@thenerdparty.com. And so you can find us through all of those avenues. And of course, what show would be complete, right, Matt, without a Facebook page?
That's right. We're on Facebook, John, at The Nerd Party. As well as what show would be a show if it didn't have a Twitter account talking about things. And you can find us at The Jedi Masters. So hopefully you'll join us in all of those places because we really enjoy your feedback. Honestly, so many of our shows already have come from listener ideas. So please keep sending those in because it helps us make sure that we're asking ourselves interesting questions to negotiate on. But you know what, John? I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.